I trust the interviews gave you some hope that this behavior can be turned around with the Lord's help. And we want to spend some time now examining how you can help somebody who is struggling with this. We want to first look at and understanding the nature of anorexia and bulimia. As we go along, I'm going to give you different slices out of some of the testimonies of the girls that I've worked with. I've mixed a lot of elements up. I've selected about 25 cases and kind of mixed up some of the elements so that nobody is identifiable, and kind of mixed them together and to keep them anonymous. So I hope it, if you think you know somebody by my description, you don't know them, because they don't exist this way that you're going to see them. Well, let's first look at a definition of anorexia nervosa. It is deliberate self-starvation resulting in severe weight loss. To formulate some specific diagnostic criteria, if we go to the DSM-3R, it is, first of all, shows a refusal to maintain body weight, generally around 15% body weight loss from what their normal weight is for that age and size of a person. They have a fear of gaining weight, a distortion of their body image, which we saw in the interviews. They feel fat even though they, and look fat to themselves even though they are not. And a for the gals, a cessation of the menstrual cycle. Now, when these elements are together, then we have anorexia nervosa. Some general information about this. This begins sometime in pre-puberty to the 30s, although those extremes are, those far ends are really more rare. Most of the time this is occurs early to late adolescence. Incidence here is about 1 in 100 gals, more than you would think. These are ages around ages 12 to 18 here. And complications that can set in: hospitalization when there is severe dehydration and some other medical problems, and in some cases, death. 5 to 18% death rate due to anorexia. Some physical characteristics, many of these you heard about in the interviews. Digestive problems, certainly when you are changing things around in your stomach and digestive tract as they are, there you can develop some very severe problems. Gastric discomfort, constipation, when the bowels get used to all of these laxatives, or where there's dehydration or insufficient bowel material, much discomfort in the digestive system. And then also skin discoloration, lanugo, this is white, white fuzzy hair that can develop on the body. As the body loses its fat layer, it tries to stay warm and develops this this hair on the body. Skin can turn a yellowish color, very scaly, rough, dry because of the dehydration. Menstruation ceases here. This can be a problem, and many times this occurs even before significant weight loss. And doctors don't exactly know why. Perhaps it's the stress that the gal is under that affects this affects her cycle. Some of the more serious problems, the cardiovascular problems, when electrolyte levels are altered, and irregular heartbeat or slowed heartbeat. In fact, many of the deaths in anorexia are due to cardiac arrest. So this is a problem. Brain functioning problems, thoughts are slowed down as this condition develops, as self-starvation goes on. Thoughts are slowed down. There is a shortened attention span, slowed thinking processes, delirium, migraine headaches. One girl that I was dealing with had begun to develop seizure activity just as a result of destructive things happening in her brain. Glandular dysfunctions, especially thyroid problems. This can affect their energy levels, body temperature, skin and nail conditions, and many other abnormalities. It would take a good-sized book just to cover all of the things that begin happening when the body starts shutting down because of starvation. Other abnormalities here may affect the liver, the hormone levels in the body, water retention, other organs such as and even kidney failure is possible when weight levels drop down around 50 pounds, which is a very light girl at that time, and very, very serious condition. Now, there are some predisposing elements, and we saw these in the interviews as well. These are not hidebound factors in every situation, but they're common enough for us to look at and say, to be asking questions as we're dealing with a girl and say, are these elements true in your situation? Family background plays a big part in this. There's no single set of parental characteristics, which is universally present. But one thing is most often true, and that is that the parents are not modeling biblical problem-solving methods and skills in their marriage and in their family. This child does not know how to solve problems biblically because mom and dad don't know how to solve problems biblically. In many cases, mothers and sisters are anorexic, and you find sisters who are anorexic together. But in any case, at least in the home, there is often a real emphasis on eating or nutrition or dieting or something, but food is made to be a central issue. Parental conflicts in the home breed a great deal of fear and insecurity, as we saw in the interviews, and a desire then to bring some measure of control back into my life because things are going out of control. So family background is important in this. Often the parents are overprotective, and that every need and every action of the child is monitored. And I'm not talking about responsible parenting that all of us need to be exhibiting as parents, but an overprotection here, an obsession with making sure everything is just right and every need is attended to with the children. Conflicts are never really resolved. We saw this in the interview, that mom and dad made me stop doing what I was doing, but they never dealt with the inner conflicts, the fights that were going on inside. As James 4:1 says, from whence come the wars and the fightings among you? Come they not hence even of your lust? There is an internal battle going on here. And it is not enough just to put the lid on the can and say, stop it. We have to deal with what's going on inside and deal with that issue as well. This is often, as one of the gals mentioned on the interviews, she was the perfect little girl, mom's perfect little girl. And this is often the case here. She wants to please her parents and either feels she is constantly failing and therefore must bring something back into control, or feels very resentful that they are so controlling of her and now she's going to control something and there's a retaliation going on here. Many of these dynamics are working back and forth, and a lot of this has to do with what is happening in the family. There is often a previous overweight condition. As two of the girls on the interviews mentioned, they were slightly overweight in junior high and wanted to get rid of that junior high pudginess, as one of the girls said. And so there was a previous overweight condition. And that's true in about a third of the cases of anorexic girls. And then, of course, this was also mentioned, the cultural emphasis today upon success and fitness, the success that you have to be a high performer, you have to be an achiever, and this produces a drivenness in this gal, and an emphasis on fitness and looking good in our culture. In fact, it's interesting, in watching television, you have all of these ads that say, eat this wonderful tasting thing, this chocolate pie, and all of this. And while we have all of these ads saying, eat all of these things, then we have all of these other ads that say, you can't be happy unless you're slim. And, you know, so you have all of these conflicting things. And our culture says, indulge yourself, eat whatever you want and feel good, but make sure you stay thin. This is quite a dilemma. But this is a cultural emphasis here that is creating a problem for these girls. Some emotional and behavioral characteristics. As we saw, control is the primary issue here. It is the most dominant characteristic. And the perfectionistic model child is the most consistent trait, although it's not always present in every situation. But these girls have often a desire to be a people pleaser. Don't want to ripple the waters. They don't want to take any risks. This is the girl whose parents would say of her, she has never given us any trouble. We don't understand what's going wrong. She's always been the model child. and this girl has control and security are such big issues for her. She hasn't ever fought back or didn't fight back much because she is very insecure and very fearful and doesn't want to rock the boat any. She does become an overachiever, which produces often a great deal of depression. Because you can't constantly stay up at this intense energy level and produce like you're expecting yourself and you assume everybody else is expecting you. And so depression is a common thing, and so is anxiety, panic, whenever there is a chance of failure. There's a great deal of fear and panic at that thought. Along with this, compulsive behaviors. One of the girls mentioned how everything just had to be just right. One girl I was working with, everything in her room had to be just right. She had bookcases of books, and they all had to be in alphabetical order. And then another day she would grow dissatisfied with that, and she'd say, well, no, they need to be in alphabetical order by author instead of by title. And so she would rearrange them and get them just perfect that way. And then they had to be all in order according to the smallest size book to the largest size book. And then the colors of the rainbow for the book jacket colors. And constantly rearranging and compulsively working things out in a different way. She dusted her room 3 and 4 times a day, vacuumed it twice a day. She wouldn't drink out of any. She would not just to make sure that nobody would drink out of her any glass that she had. She would drink out of it and put it in the refrigerator with Saran wrap over it, and nobody would use that glass. And she had her own set of silverware. She didn't want anybody else to use the same silverware that she was using. And all of this compulsive behavior was a part of this pattern. That comes through in many cases with the exercise. The exercise becomes a compulsive thing. As both Carol and Beth mentioned on the interviews, how they would just exercise compulsively, and Carol had to cover this by getting somebody else to go with her so that it didn't look like she was doing this so much. I remember in one girl's situation, her dormitory counselor was helping her monitor her exercise and keeping that down, and she became very deceptive in that. She would go into a dormitory cleanup closet and do sit-ups for 50, 60 minutes, just trying to keep up her exercise in a way that nobody else would find out. Another girl that I dealt with who lived in town, she would wake up 2 or 3 o'clock at night. She was having a lot of sleep disturbance, and she would wake up at that time of the night and just feel she had to get out and run. And a very dangerous thing, but she would get on her sweats and go out and run around the block at 2 or 3 o'clock at night, and she did that for a couple of years before anybody found out what she was doing. Again, a great deal of deception in that, in making sure her parents didn't know it, and a very destructive thing for her to be doing as well. But compulsive behaviors go along with this. Some of that is designed to bring, it seems unusual to us if you're not involved in it, but it brings a sense of relief to be doing the same thing over and over and over again. You can kind of put your mind in gear and concentrate, or put your mind out of gear, and just do what has become habitual for you, and you don't have to think about your problems. You can just concentrate on this compulsive activity, and there is an escape in that. And somewhat of a relief, because now I don't have to think of all the problems because I'm working on this right now and I just have this to think about. Many girls have, along with this compulsive activity, have many, many rules that they have imposed on themselves. The book of Leviticus will not hold a candle to the amount of rules that they come up with. As I mentioned, this girl, the silverware had to be a certain thing, and she didn't want anybody drinking out of a glass that she had used. I don't mean a glass that hadn't been washed, but any glass that she had ever touched, she didn't want anybody else to touch that. And she didn't want to touch any glass anybody else had. And her rules, she wrote out for me one day as part of an exercise, many of the rules that she had. And the book of Leviticus had a lot to learn from that. She had many, many, many things. There's a great deal of safety to the girl in this, because she knows what she's doing, and she has her life all ruled out and has it all worked out. And it's the compulsive activity can become very destructive in itself, at least excruciatingly time-consuming in doing all of these things repeatedly and trying to work them out. In many girls, the control is trying to delay a sexual development. One of the things that I didn't see in the literature right away when I was studying, but it kept coming up in my counseling, was many of these girls have been sexually abused. And I would guess a third to a half, perhaps, of the ones that I dealt with had been sexually abused as well, and as children. And as they began to sexually mature, self-starvation was one way of staving off the development of becoming a woman and having to face all of these sexual issues. In fact, one girl that I dealt with would not even purchase her own paper products for her monthly period. She had her mother mail them to her every month because she did not want herself to face the fact that she needed this, and now she had to start becoming responsible to take care of herself. And there was an extreme fear here of developing sexually as a woman. Another girl I dealt with was raped at work one time in high school, and then was raped once at work here in Greenville. And she decided, if men are after my body, then I am going to become very thin so that nobody will ever want me again. And she was a rather tall girl. She was about 5'11", and at one time she was around 95 pounds when she was finally hospitalized. And but her reaction here was to the sexual development and her being a woman, and this was her way of dealing with it. Now, of course, along with this is a great deal of deception. Because if you have to be perfect and if you have to have it in control, there's only one person who really can do that, and that's God. The rest of us have to fake it. Okay, so if you have to have everything in control, and obviously everything is not going to be in control, you have to deceive people into thinking you do have your act together and everything is all right. So deception is a major, major part in this activity. Some of the precipitating elements, as you might imagine, stressful life situations with unbiblical problem-solving skills. I already mentioned some of this, the family conflicts. Beth mentioned in her testimony that her parents had moved to a new place. Mother was not for the move, and she herself was not for the move, and it was obvious that her mom didn't like it. In fact, there was almost a divorce over it. There's much family conflict going on in here. And then she hits a new town, and she has to start all over. Now, I see many times a move is part of a lot of this initiation because it is a new setting, and while mom and dad are busy trying to get the house settled in and get a new job and locate and get all the utilities turned on, and for several weeks they are involved in just getting acclimated, and here are the children left pretty much to fend for themselves. And this is often a factor here. But certainly major conflicts that are going on in the family and major losses. The breakup of a boyfriend or of a girlfriend, a family move, a comment by somebody that, don't you think you ought to start going on a diet? A couple of girls, the precipitating factor was dad's comment, you better start going on a diet or you're going to look like your mom. And that's the last thing she wanted to do because mom was overweight. And this was a major loss to her. This was rejection by her dad unless she was a certain weight, and a very difficult thing for a girl. Other major losses, as I mentioned, incest or rape. One girl I dealt with, her high school principal had raped her and two other girls in the school. Another girl who was having a very difficult time with keeping the weight up and keeping her health together had been sexually abused by a man in her church. And this is a common element in it as well. And physical changes may be precipitating this, physical changes in her body. One girl that I worked with had some work done on her jaw, had to have her jaw broken and some bones taken out. And then her mouth was wired shut for several weeks. Well, during that time, she lost a good deal of weight and thought, this is a really good idea. I like the way I look. And so she started into anorexic behavior then as a result of the weight loss while she was not able to eat normally. Another girl had spinal meningitis And because of her extended period of time in the hospital and in recovery, she lost a great deal of weight, wanted to keep that weight off, and continued then this kind of behavior to make sure that she stayed down. Now, those are some of the main elements in anorexia. Let's look quickly at bulimia. Many of the factors are similar, but there are also some very significant differences. By definition, we would say this is a behavioral pattern of binge eating, followed by some effort to reverse the consequences of the binge with or without weight loss. The purging may be with laxatives or with diuretics or by vomiting or excessive exercise may be a part of this as well. And she may be losing weight, she may not. She is taking on, in some cases, thousands of calories per binge and now has to find some way to get this off quickly. You'll find in this, for diagnostic criteria, binge eating, which is not true of anorexia. The anorexic is trying not to eat. The bulimic gal is eating a great deal. Lack of control while she's eating. She gets the feeling that she can't stop once she starts. Now, please understand when you hear that, when she says, "I simply can't stop," that's not true. She can stop, but it is true. She feels that she can't stop. She is afraid that she can't stop. But she can stop. Purging is also a part of this in one form or another, vomiting or use of laxatives or other things. And generally, for this to be diagnosed as bulimia, there have to be at least two episodes a week for 3 months in the binging and purging. And there is an obsession with body size and shape going on in this girl's mind. Now, some general information about bulimia. The age, very similar, adolescence to early adult. Although the incidence of this rises significantly, several studies demonstrate 20 to 30% of college girls are into bulimia. And that is binging and then purging. Probably in both anorexia and bulimia, somewhere between 5 and 10% of anorexics and bulimics are men. And in the case of bulimia, most of those men are in some kind of work where they have to keep their body weight down. They're in a professional wrestling and to stay in their class. They can't just go out and pig out on pizza, although they may do that. They come and they purge and get rid of it. Or they're into acting or modeling or something else that where their body image is important to their job. And they don't have the self-discipline to eat normally, and they will go out and binge and then figure they have to purge that in some way. Complications can be similar to anorexia, and that is hospitalization, and eventually death can be a problem as well. Now, in addition to the physical characteristics and the problems that come up in anorexia, there are several that are rather unique to bulimia. There is erosion of tooth enamel as hydrochloric acid from the stomach is coming up through the esophagus and into the mouth and over the teeth and eroding the tooth enamel, creating discoloration and a great deal of tooth pain. There are esophagus tears because of the vomiting. Stomach ruptures, which are very rare, but have happened where there's where the stomach actually ruptures because of everything in it. A facial puffiness, almost a chipmunk look that some girls have because the glands are swollen up in their neck. And blood sugar level fluctuates, and this can be a problem as well. So many complications come along. This is why it's important, and I'll stress this again, it's important to get a physician involved right away when you're dealing with somebody, because you have no idea, particularly with bulimia, how far along these gals are in this destructive behavior. A bulimic girl can look normal weight. She may even look a bit overweight and be in dangerous condition with her electrolyte level because she's constantly bringing up everything that's in her stomach and there is no nutrition there and the level gets off very quickly. And it's important to get her with a physician right away. In fact, that's one of the first things that I do when a dormitory counselor tells me I think I have an anorexic or a bulimic here. After they talk with her and try to find that out for sure, the first thing I want them to do is to get over to our clinic and get some blood work done and see a doctor and find out how far along we are. That's going to be very, very important. And it is more important, perhaps, with a bulimic because you don't know how bad off she is. because she may look very normal from the outside. Now, some emotional and behavioral characteristics of a bulimic. This gal lives with a desire-oriented viewpoint. She is constantly indulging and giving in to into herself. This desire-oriented living is going to be a problem. That's where the lack of discipline comes in, and her self-indulgence. There is what I want to call the pleasure amidst the yuck. A person who is desire-oriented is not very successful in a lot of things. A slothful man, a lazy man, or a person constantly indulging in his flesh is not going to be a very productive person. In fact, one of the biggest differences between an anorexic and a bulimic is that the anorexic is often very orderly and very disciplined and highly perfectionistic. But a bulimic, many things in her life can be totally out of control, just like her eating is out of control. And she can be very perfectionistic in some things, but generally a gal who is eating gargantuan amounts of food and is living and does not have much self-discipline is a very desire-oriented person. Now, when things are going out of kilter in your life and there's a lot of unpleasant things happening, then you want something that brings some pleasure. And a lot of the eating starts because of stressful situations that have happened, and you want some pleasure. There are two forms, the two quickest forms of pleasure known to man are eating and sex. They give instant pleasure, instant gratification. As an example, when we are having a hard day at the office and we have just really concentrated and really worked, or even at home when we're working on something real hard and we want to take a break, what do? We go to the refrigerator and we get something to put in our mouth. Not because we need nutrition, but because it makes us feel good fast. Now, when a lot of things are going out of kilter in your life and a lot of things are going out of control and you want some pleasure in your life, then one of the ways to do that is indulge in eating. Now, eventually, when this kicks in to be a very severe habit, a life-dominating sin, there is very little pleasure as this girl is binging. In fact, the food is going in so fast, she hardly will taste it. And there the relief and the pleasure comes from just the act of getting into something that they think they're in control of it while it is out of control. But the pleasure no longer just comes from the food, but from the activity itself. But this gal lives in desire-oriented style. This theme keeps coming up, the deception, the running and hiding, running away from people and relationships. You heard every one of these girls on the videotape mention how eventually they became very isolated. They stayed away from people. She would go up to her room. They would avoid friends, avoid talking with people. And there's a lot of hiding that has to take place here. Because, number one, you're going to binge in secret. I read a report. I have not dealt with anybody this extensively. But I read a report of one lady whose binging habit was a 15,000 calorie binge every time she did it, and she did it several times a week. You do that in secret, folks. You don't do that out in front of everybody. And there's a great deal of deception that is going on here because you have to hide this behavior. One lady that my wife and I were working with, a couple of preschool children, and her. And for years and years and years, she has had this, and not until recently did her husband even know about it. And they've been married, oh my, it must be 10, 11 years by now. And he did not know that she was bulimic. And she was in a type of work before in sales and marketing where her appearance in public had to be just right, and even when she met with us, she was probably at somewhere 8 or 10 size dress, and yet consuming enormous amounts of food every day, but having to get rid of this. Her husband worked a lot out in his shop, and after the children were in bed and he was out working in her shop, the amount of ice cream and pancakes, she said in one of the forums that I used with them, I asked them what a typical binge is like. She would make a whole batch of pancakes. Eat it with the whole batch with a stick of butter and a cup of syrup and a half gallon of ice cream on top of that and other fluids, because if you're going to throw it up, you need a lot of liquid involved in this. And her husband never knew this, but this gets very expensive because you have to replace all of this food. And in fact, that's one of the other. Not only do you binge in secret and purge in secret, but you have to steal in secret. And many gals, this is a common problem with bulimia, is that they get into stealing from stores in town and in college, from roommates and other people down the hall, not just food, but money to be able to pay for the food. Some ladies report a $100 a day habit just in eating. And this is a life-dominating sin. And, of course, we saw this in excuse-making, because you have to constantly be making up excuses of why you're up in the room all the time, or why you don't have the money that somebody gave you, and where were you, and why are you all sweaty if you haven't been exercising yet, and you have to make excuses for everything. A great deal of deception here. This is why I make a great point, a strong point with the gals, is that the more you are into this, the more you do look like Satan. Because he is a deceiver and a destroyer. And the more you imitate him, the more you become conformed to the image of Satan instead of the image of God. And distorted problem solving. As one of the girls said on the interview, just the least little bit thing would set me off. This becomes the solution to every stressful situation eventually. Every time there's anything upsetting, then it's a binge and a purge. And very much a life-dominating sin. In bulimia, some of the predisposing elements, again, are very similar to anorexia. But in this case, often the parents are obese. And you heard in the testimonies here where one girl said, both of my parents were overweight. And I didn't want the kind of talk that I heard them get, the kind of problems this created for them. And I didn't want it, so she got into bulimia. Often the parents are depressed. One or more of the parents is struggling most of the time with depression. See, this is not a happy home. This is not the kind of place you really want to come home to. There's not a lot of happy things happening here. And so pleasure becomes something that you pursue with a passion. And it begins by eating for pleasure. One girl I dealt with, the depression was very rampant in her family. Her great grandfather died of suicide. Her grandfather took his life, and her father took his life. This is a very depressed home, and this is often the case. Often, those gals who are into bulimia start bulimia as a young adult in their later 20s and 30s, were obese as adolescents and now are so tired of it. And a quick way to reverse this process is get into bulimia. The precipitating elements are very similar to anorexia as well. Stressful situations provide temptations to heavier eating. And that was true of anorexia, only not a temptation to eating, but the stressful situation there. And obviously a fear of obesity. Here's a gal who is giving in and indulging in the eating, but is afraid of becoming obese like mom or dad. And so she becomes a candidate then for bulimia. Now, we have to define, if we're going to help a girl here, we have to define our counseling philosophy. And the first thing we have to come to understand is that anorexia and bulimia are not diseases, but they are life-dominating sins. I've read some literature recently by Christian counselors who want to make this into a mental disorder. It is not. It does have some effect on the brain eventually. But this is a life-dominating sin. It is not a disease, although it does create physical problems. It is not a disease. They are basically sinful patterns of misdirected control. Something has gone out of control. There's not enough pleasure, or there are stressful situations or whatever, but something has gone out of control, and the anorexic is going to control it. The bulimic is going to indulge to feel better and then try to control her indulgence by purging in some way. But control becomes a very, very critical thing here. The biblical approach in counseling somebody is the same for alcoholism or drunkenness, for compulsive gambling, for sexual perversions, anything that is a life-dominating sin. You deal with it basically the same. Now, if you're going to work with anorexia, you also have a physical element you have to become familiar with so that you can and get a doctor involved, because you have a life-threatening situation here eventually. But in much, they have many of the same characteristics as any other life-dominating sin. The main difference between this, between an eating behavior and these other things, is that you do have to eat. You know, if somebody has a problem with compulsively watching television, you know, and they're channel freaks here. They have to get one of these televisions where you can have four things on the screen at once. You watch four channels at the same time, and they have to watch everything, and they're compulsively watching television. Well, if you're going to help somebody with a life-dominating sin like that, you get rid of the television. But you can't stop eating. You have to still eat. You can stay away from Las Vegas or Atlantic City or wherever else if you have a compulsive gambling habit. But you can't stop eating. Now, the anorexic is stopping eating, but you can't get away from food because you need it to survive. That's one of the things that makes this a little more difficult to deal with. Because in the other things, you can say, you don't need alcohol, you don't need gambling, you don't need television, you don't even need sex, but you do need to eat. So that makes it a little more difficult than some of the others. But basically, we're still talking about a life-dominating sin. One of the things that we have to come to an agreement with a gal is that there are certain things that are totally unacceptable because of their sinful indulgence and destructive behavior to you. And that is the binging. Now, all of us, you know, we may be guilty of gluttony at Thanksgiving and Christmas or whatever. But that's not the same thing that is happening here, where there's a life-dominating sin. Purging is out, binging is out, starving yourself by fasting is out, hiding food so that you can binge later, or hide it so that you give the impression that you've eaten it, when in fact you have not. Under or over-serving yourself, using laxatives, using diet pills, using diuretics, manipulating your weight in some way by drinking a lot of fluids before you weigh in with your counselor, excessive exercise or not following the prescribed meal plan. When we're working with somebody, the first thing we want to do is say, these things are unacceptable. They will not be tolerated. And for you, now there may be a time when somebody in a normal situation underserves himself or overserves himself or uses a laxative or uses a diet pill or something. But for this girl in this situation, all of these are out. These are unacceptable behaviors. Now, one of the first things that you want to do, as I mentioned earlier, is get them some medical attention. And the first thing, as I said previously, is a physical examination. That's going to be very, very important. And I would advise you to make sure that you have a good relationship with a physician and if possible, a Christian physician who has the same biblical view that you do about life-dominating problems. But get her to a physician immediately and let that physician give you some advice. Many, this is just a generic thing, but many groups say one of the first things they want to try to do is get the girl on at least a 1,200 calorie diet. That will keep her from losing any more weight than she already has, and she is not going to gain much weight at that point, but it will keep her at an acceptable metabolic rate and keep her body from degenerating. And then many, many programs will try to add a couple of hundred calories a week to her diet. And many groups and physicians working with this will use an exchange diet similar to what is used by a diabetic. And you can get literature from pharmaceutical companies and check it out of the library for exchange plans for diabetics, and they'll have exchange plans for 1,200 calories and 1,500 calories and 1,800 calories, and work with a physician or with a nutritionist or dietitian in getting this established. Hospitalization is imperative if she has lost 25% of her body weight. for her age. And a couple of key factors in determining this, and this is a decision that a physician needs to make, but he will take into account the rapidity of the weight loss, the presence or the absence of obesity prior to the weight loss. If they were overweight, 25% may not be so destructive as if they were at a normal weight when they started losing that weight. And thirdly, the physical status of that individual, whether the electrolyte level is out of balance or their cardiac irregularities, and fourthly, if they're the presence of starvation symptoms. In those cases, then a doctor will put them in a hospital. Some counselors have come up with a workable plan at home with the doctor's supervision where a diet is worked out for this girl for her weight level, and the doctor said she needs to be on a 1,200 calorie diet, and the food is served to her, and rewards and restrictions at home are based on how she eats. In fact, if you have somebody hospitalized and they just refuse to eat, then you begin withholding bathroom privileges. They must stay in the bed, and they have to use a bedpan until they start eating and start putting on back some weight. And you withhold privileges and reward and restrict based on how well they're doing in putting this weight loss, this weight back on. And that can be worked out at home as well. But I would advise you to work that out with the doctor. And obviously, if she's lost 25%, then you're not going to be working on that at home. That's going to have to be something that's done done in a hospital. One counselor suggested this. I'll read you his statement. He said this could be at home, or if you are working with a doctor who allows you to do some of the counseling yourself in a hospital. Food trays are taken to the patient without comments about her eating. Detailed records of all she eats and drinks are kept, along with her daily weight. She should be praised when she eats the food served. Privileges are also given or lost depending on eating. Discussions with her center on things other than food, for example, on what she is doing, what she likes about it, or other things she likes to do at school, social activities, etc. In such conversations, conflict areas may arise. These should be reported to the physician and counselor. The bottom line of the reward and punishment system is that if weight doesn't level off and start climbing, the counselee will have to be fed intravenously. This will be continued until she changes her actions, begins eating, and the weight begins to stabilize and increase. Even though the home or hospital atmosphere is calm and relaxed without criticism of failure, counseling is not stopped. It should be continued throughout each step as it is not separate from the medical problems. If there is a refusal to follow the structure to produce a weight gain, this means either the underlying problems have not been determined and handled biblically, or the counselee is resisting obedience to God's word. So this can be managed, and you need to get a physician involved right away. Now, what are some of the counseling strategies? Our philosophy in dealing with life-dominating sins is that when dealing with life-dominating sins and the normal things, and by normal things we define those as the normal things that we do as Christians, the Bible reading, Bible memorization, meditation, prayer, accountability, worship together, when the normal things don't seem to be working in this girl's life, we don't jettison the normal things, we increase the normal things. There is more accountability. There is more meditation. There is more memorization. There is more prayer. There is more worship. All of these things are increased. We don't jettison the normal things and go for some 12-step program or go for some other program in order to try to bring about change. God has defined how change is to take place in His Word. And when there are problems and we seem to be stuck, we don't jettison those normal things. We increase the normal things. So that is a primary counseling strategy. Now that goes, first of all, in our data gathering. Now, we use as a counseling model here this diagram where we have the problem situation, the emotions, behavior, and thinking. We want to find out all the things that are going on in the outer man. And this is where the data gathering comes in. I'm going to demonstrate some of those things too. You're going to find out as much as you can what is happening in this gal's life. What are the emotions she's experiencing? What is the behavior she has been involved in, or where she has people have behaved in certain ways toward her? What is her thinking? What's going through her mind? How is she reasoning? All of these things are part of the data gathering, and eventually we want to get to the heart of the issue, and we'll come back to that in a little bit. But because we're dealing with a life-dominating sin, we don't just ask, regular questions about how you doing and sleeping okay at night and how's mom and that kind of thing, we increase the normal things. If normally we would ask a bunch of questions, when we're dealing with a life-dominating sin, we increase the amount of questions we ask. I like to use several forms to gather that information. I use the PDI, the Personal Data Inventory, and then a couple other forms for eating behavior that I call eating behavior supplements. And by the time the gal finishes filling out this, I have a pretty good idea of what's going on in her life. And I have intensified the dating gathering enormously by asking all of those questions and getting input from her. And then what goes on in the counseling interview is intensified. As Beth mentioned, the first thing that the counselor asked her about was her salvation. This needs to be nailed down very, very concretely. Remember, Paul said in 1 Corinthians 6 that when people had these life-dominating sins, that they were not part of the kingdom of God. And any time I am under the control this excessively of something else, there needs to be a question, am I really saved? Because I'm not to be in bondage to anything else. So the salvation issue needs to be settled. And then I'm going to try to find out as much as I can about the predisposing and precipitating elements. Now, these come out in the questions on the data sheets. I want to know, for example, when she started the behavior, how it started. I want to know what weight fluctuation she has experienced. What means has she used to manipulate her weight? Is she using laxatives or diuretics or exercise? And if she's exercising, I want to know how much and how often a week she's doing this and with whom she's doing it and where and what kind of exercises she's doing. I want to know her attitudes about normal eating. Some girls would never think of eating a normal meal, anorexic girls particularly. There's no way. One girl I dealt with, the only thing she ever ate was lettuce out of the dining common at noon. And that was her meal. And she would not touch anything outside the dining common, inside the dining common, except that lettuce. Kind of like Beth and her celery sticks. I want to know if there are any other areas of failure in her life. I'm going to find out about medical attention. What has been done so far? Has she been seen by a physician? And then other areas of failure. Is she stealing? Is she gambling? Is she sexually active and unmarried? Is there pornography going on in her life? One girl I dealt with, her obsession was with horror movies. She was anorexic and in and out of the hospital several times. But when she was home, she was obsessed with horror movies. Everything that came out, she had to watch that. And there was a lot of inner turmoil going on because of all the things that she was seeing. And there were other addictions, if I can say, other life-dominating sins going on in her life at the same time. I want to know if there are self-destructive behaviors. How has she tried to hurt herself in the past, either to punish herself or to get somebody else's attention? Has she tried suicide? This kind of thing. I want to know about her fears of losing control. And on the sheets, I'll ask her to give me five times when you thought you were going to lose control and what you did about it. I want to know what foods are forbidden in her mind. And I'll have her create a list of forbidden foods, the foods she would never eat for anything in the world. I want to know what her typical day is like, what she thinks about in the morning. I have journals from girls, and they'll tell me in the morning I wake up and my first thought is of food and what I'm going to cook. She doesn't plan to eat any of it, but she's counting calories and planning out meals for other family members, and her first and last thoughts are about food, and every unpreoccupied thought during the day is on food. What feelings is she reacting to? What depression is going on? What anger? What bitterness? So I'm getting a lot of data from these supplement sheets and having her keep track of what she's eating, and how often she's eating and how much. And even here in the dining common at the university, it's not enough to say, "Did you go to lunch today?" "Yeah, I went to lunch." "What did you eat?" "Well, I ate some. I had a salad and some pizza." "How much pizza?" "Well, about." "Well, I took one bite." There's a big difference in eating a serving of pizza and eating one bite. A big difference in not only in honesty in telling you here, but a big difference in what that's doing to her body. and I need to find this information out. What accountability is in her life? Is she willing to be accountable for what she eats? Is she willing to go to lunch with somebody else and make sure that she stays with that person for at least an hour after she eats so that that food has begun to absorb into her body? Is she willing to be made accountable for this, for her exercise and for her eating? And is there a need for hope in her life? And I may get her with somebody else. Here's a letter that I was working with an anorexic girl, and she was really growing in the Lord. And she asked me, is there anybody else I can help? And I said, yes, Carol, who was on the video here, is really struggling. I just met with her the week before, and she wrote this letter. She said, hi, you don't know me, but Mr. Berg mentioned you to me. I just wanted to write a quick note to let you know that I'm praying for you. Believe me when I say that I understand what you're going through. I was anorexic and bulimic. As you begin working with Mr. Berg, you're starting some of the hardest work you will ever face in your life. I don't say this to discourage you, but to show you reality. But you have a wonderful advantage over most girls who are struggling with this deadly pattern. You are not alone. Neither do you have to change in your own strength. Much of the time, you're not going to feel like doing what is right. But as Christians, you and I have the Holy Spirit within us, and He gives us the strength to do what we need to do. 2 Corinthians 3:5 says, not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think anything is of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God. Has Mr. Berg shared the four stabilizing truths with you yet? If not, be assured he will. Little smiley face there. These truths, 1, God's love for you is unchanging. 2, God's purpose for you is Christ-likeness. 3, God's grace for me is sufficient. And 4, God's word to me is the final right answer, are the basis for renewing our minds. The key to change and becoming God's kind of person. So far I know the truths, but I'm still not consistent when it comes to applying them. And she went on she finished, I will be praying that you will keep your mind open as you begin this program. Maybe someday we can meet when Mr. Berg feels it would be okay, and if you want to, in Christ. And she signed her name. If she needs some hope, and you've worked with some other girls, this is a good way to help give her some hope. There is somebody else involved in this who has been through it. Now, remember, we want to go from just these outer issues, what's going on in her life, and all of this data gathering. We want to get to the heart. What is going on inside? What are the desires, and what is it that who is in control? Several counseling issues here that I want to find out about. I want to know about her fears, and some of this comes out in the questions on the supplement sheets that I have her fill out. I want to know about her fears. I want to know about her anger. And I have some cassette messages on fear and anger and depression that I'll have her listen to that will help her identify some of these things and bring them out into the open so that we can talk about them. I want to know about her depression, about her view of the body. Look, there is no biblical command to be thin. Most of us say, all right, yes, that's good. There's no Bible command to be thin. There is a Bible command to look like Jesus Christ. There is no Bible command to look like Cheryl Teague or whoever else happens to be in the fashion mode. But there is a command to look like Jesus Christ, and while I'm in this behavior, I'm not looking like Jesus Christ. And ultimately, it's not going to help me look like Cheryl Teague or anybody else either. As it was Beth who mentioned, eventually I got so emaciated and so discolored, other people didn't want to be around me. And it worked against me. This is God's body, and it's on loan from God. I can't just do with it what I want any more than you can take my car and do anything with it you want. You can't take God's body and do it with it anything you want. You can't take anybody else's body and do with it anything you want, and you can't take your own because it doesn't belong to you. And some time needs to be spent with them as well. Then, most importantly, though, I want to find out, what are the ruling desires, the lusts that are going on in her heart? James 1:14 says that every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lust. What is it that she wants more than anything else? That's the issue you have to get at. That pleasing God versus pleasing self. She is either desiring to please herself in her own views and her own perspective on life, or she's going to have a desire to please God. And the desire to please self is that clenched fist that says, I will live life my own way, and I can do it okay without God. I can handle it without God my way. That's the clenched fist. And that has to be repented of. There's pride in that. There's a pride of manipulation. Manipulating other people. Manipulating your food and your schedule. Punishing other people. God says, vengeance is mine. Many of these girls have been through some traumatic things. I mentioned the sexual abuse, but vengeance is mine. And you'll have to address those issues with her. The manipulation of using other people. One gal I dealt with who came here in high school did not want to be here. Her parents put her in school here, got her away from home because of a bad relationship with a boy. She came here, did not want to be here. Her protest was, well, then I'm not going to eat. The starvation diet, it was a, you know, one of those hunger fasts just to prove that you're wrong and I'm going to punish you. And it got started. But that's manipulation. There is a pride of perfectionism, that I have to have a perfect body and I have to have a perfect behavior and perfect performance. And there's this disdain for other people who don't have it together like I do. Look at all those pigs over there at the salad bar and going through the line and they're doing all this. And there's pride in that, in looking down on other people because they don't have it in control like you have it in control. And the perfectionism, that I have to know what's going on, and I have to have it right, and I have to do it my way. There is a great, enormous amount of pride in this perfectionism, in this control. I have to be in control. Look, as long as I've finally figured out, as long as I'm on this side of heaven, I'm never going to be in control. I'm not going to have my act together. It won't get together this side of heaven. And that's one of the critical things she has to learn, is that God is in control, and she has no right to usurp that control from God. And the pride of self-indulgence, that I can eat whatever I want for the bulimic here, or for the anorexic. I can indulge in my exercise as much as I want. No, you can't. There's pride in that. God says exercise, bodily exercise profiteth but a little. It profits, but just a little. And she's making it the whole obsession of her life. There's self-indulgence of the binging, or the self-indulgence of the exercising, or the use of the laxatives or whatever, and then the self-indulgence of trying to overcome the consequences of those things. And the shortcut to life, the slothful, sluggard way of doing things, not allowing the consequences of my sin to change me. That's going on. Then, ultimately, submission, and not ultimately, but primarily at the beginning. This isn't something that comes at the end, but control to God has to be surrendered. And that means repentance. That means reconciliation to God and others. That means restitution for the stealing, going back to mom and dad and confessing my breaches of trust with them and being restored in fellowship with them. Restriction. Are you willing to go with somebody to lunch? Are you willing to be under this diet plan? Are you willing to have a counsel? All of this restriction and radical amputation. That's where you eliminate from their lives the things that make it easy for them to sin again. When you radically amputate your arm, Jesus said, if your right arm offend you, cut it off. Cutting it off is amputation, and doing it to help you not sin again is radical. But God says, this is what we're calling for. You make the radical amputation, or the friends of the isolation, of the habits in your mind and the habits in your body that have to be changed. And then several things that she'll need counseling about. The enslaving power of sin. This isn't a physical disorder, although it has physical consequences. This is enslavement of sin, and you are not to be brought into bondage to any other master other than Christ. And communicating biblically, Beth mentioned this in her testimony, that I had to learn biblical communication. Many of these girls do not know how to handle problems biblically, and particularly in communication, because it was not modeled well in their home. There were so many secrets at home, and people kept things from other people and manipulated. All of that was going on. And they have to learn how to handle problems biblically. There is several areas where they need accountability and discipleship in their eating habits to bring back the weight gain, in their spiritual life, in what laxatives and exercise they're using, in how their emotions are functioning, restroom accountability. Sometimes you have to have somebody outside the door while they're inside the restroom making sure that they're not purging, or in a situation like a dormitory here, there's actually not somebody in the stall, but somebody in the restroom anytime they go into the restroom. Are they willing to be accountable for that? And regular in their counseling appointments, and then you have to teach them some emergency techniques. I use a stop think card to put stop on one side and a scripture verse on the other side. That's what one of the girls is referring to here many times, and she thought, I can't do this, I can't. She'd whip out her stop think card and say out loud to herself, stop think, I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me. And that was her reminder that she needed to call upon the Lord for strength and grace at that time and get away and run away from the opportunity. But you'll have to teach her some emergency techniques. And the goal is to get this gal to become a useful servant of God, looking like Jesus Christ instead of looking like Satan. The problem with any life-dominating sin is that it keeps us from becoming useful, godly servants for Christ. With her cooperation, the Spirit of God will take the Word of God and make her like the Son of God. She can become God's kind of person. And that's our goal, to get her back functioning in a useful position where she's not under domination and bondage to any sin habit, but she's in bondage to Christ, who's making her look like him.